He got a haircut this morning, I realize. The sides are cut close to his scalp again, and the top is soft and floppy. His dancing lake-in-the-sun eyes stare down at me, and I'm possessed by heat and the need to feel and feel and feel. "Thanks for coming to dinner last night," he says, and his gaze is doing a full circuit of my face, over my forehead and down my cheeks, hovering near my mouth. His eyes flicker down, watching me swallow before I say, "Your family is nice."
"Yeah."
"They probably thought I was a lunatic." He grins. "Only a little."
"You got a haircut."
His eyes go unfocused, staring at my mouth.
"Yeah."
I bite my lip, wanting to roar because of how he's looking at me.
"I like it. A lot."
"Yeah?
Good."
God, enough small talk. I pull him to me, my hand on the back of his neck, and he comes down immediately, mouth over mine, weight partially on me, breath leaving his lips in a relieved gust. It starts so slow, this relieved, leisurely kissing, first through self-conscious smiles, and then with the confidence that this, us, is so good it aches. And it ramps up from there, like a plane at takeoff, and we're infected at the same time with something wilder and more desperate. I don't want to think that we're hungry like this because there is a ticking clock. I am unwilling to play the chess game too many moves ahead. Instead, I think we're hungry like this because we feel something deeper. Something like love. His chest rests on mine and his hands are in my hair, and he makes these small, deep sounds that slowly unravel me until the only word I can think over and over is yes. Everything feels yes. His mouth is yes, and his hands are yes, and over me, on top of me now, he's moving, and yes, yes, yes. I run my hands down his back and under his shirt to the warm skin of his torso. Yes. There's no time to appreciate that I've answered my own garment question, because then his shirt is off. Yes, and mine comes off. Skin to skin is Y-E-S. And I've never been on bottom like this, never wrapped my leg around someone's hip, never felt this kind of shifting and friction, and he tells me he thinks about me every second, yes, and tells me he's never felt this way. He likes to suck on my bottom lip, he wants to pause time so we can kiss for hours, yes, and I tell him truthfully that nothing ever felt as good as this does, and he laughs into my mouth again because I'm sure it's obvious how into this I am. I'm a monster beneath him, with arching hips, an octopus with hands everywhere at once. I don't think anything in the history of time has felt this good. "I want to know everything about you," he says into me, frantic now, his mouth moving over my jaw, stubble scraping my neck. "I'll tell you anything." "Are you my boyfriend?" he asks, and then sucks my bottom lip before laughing at himself, as if this isn't the most amazing thing anyone has ever said to me in the history of my life.
Yes?
"Boyfriend, yes. Even if I'm your boyfriend now, I won't tell anyone about this," I whisper.
"I know."
His hand comes over me, between us, oh my God, and through my track pants. It seems so innocent and so dirty at the same time, but the dirty is washed away when I look up and realize he's watching my face, awestruck. And I get it. I've never done that either. In the days I reach down too. His eyes roll back before they fall closed. "It doesn't feel real. How can this be real?" He moves forward once and again, and this is the most amazing thing I've ever done. I don't even hear the footsteps or the door before I hear my dad's mortified, "Oh," and the door slams shut. Sebastian vaults off me, turning to face the wall, his hands pressed to his face. In the ringing silence, I'm not sure what's just happened. I mean, I know what happened, but it went so fast that for a few pounding heartbeats, I think I can pretend that he and I just shared the same hallucination. This is so bad on so many levels. No longer do I get to play the "we're just friends" angle with the grown-ups downstairs. Now we're in it, and I'm going to get an earful from one or both of my parents. But without a doubt, this is so much more humiliating for Sebastian. "Hey," I say.
"This is bad," he whispers.
He doesn't drop his hands, doesn't turn back to me. His back is bare and a map of muscle. I'm drowning in dueling reactions, giddy that I have a hot boyfriend now, and terrified that this one moment has ruined everything. "Hey," I say again, "he's not going to call your parents."
"This is so bad."
"Just come here, okay?" Turning slowly, he walks back over, lowering himself onto the bed without looking at me. He groans,
"Your dad walked in on us."
I take a beat to find the best response, settling on, "Yeah, but he's probably more mortified than we are."
"I highly doubt that."
I knew he wouldn't go for that line of reasoning, but it was worth a try.
"Look at me."
After about 10 seconds, he does. I see how he softens, and the relief of that makes me want to stand up and pound my chest.
"It's okay," I whisper.
"He isn't going to tell anyone. He's probably just going to talk to me later." As in, he will for sure talk to me later. With a defeated exhale, Sebastian closes his eyes.
"Okay."
I lean forward, and I think he senses my proximity, even if he doesn't open his eyes, because his mouth twitches in a suppressed smile. Pressing my lips to his, I offer up my bottom lip, the one he likes to suck, and wait for him to respond. Slowly, he does. It's nothing like the heat of before, but it's real. He pulls away, standing and reaching for his shirt.
"I'm going to head home."
"I'm going to stay right here." Sebastian fights another grin at the implication of this, and then I watch as the mask slowly slips into place. His forehead relaxes, and a vibrant light comes into his eyes. The easy smile I'm learning to distrust spreads across his face. "Walk me out?" It takes Dad only 15 minutes after Sebastian has left to come to my room. His knock is tentative, almost apologetic.
"Come in."
He steps in, shutting the door carefully behind him. I'm not sure whether I should be angry or remorseful, and the combination sends prickly static across my skin. Dad walks to my desk chair and takes a seat.
"First, I should apologize for not knocking the first time."
I place my open book face down on my chest, looking over at him from where I'm lying on the bed.
"Agreed."
"I don't know what to say beyond that."
He scratches his jaw and then reconsiders.
"No, that isn't quite true. I know what I want to say, but it's not where I should start."
Pushing up to sit, I swivel to face him.
"Okay. I know how you feel about Sebastian, and I'm pretty sure it's reciprocated."
"Yeah?"
"I also know that you feel this genuinely, and not out of some curiosity or rebellion."
How do I even respond to this? I nod, aware that my expression is mostly one of vague confusion.
"Does Autumn know?"
I blink, confused.
"Autie?"
"Your best friend, yes."
"I'm not out to Autumn, Dad. I'm not out to anyone, remember? Like Mom once."
"Look," Dad says, resting a hand on my knee. "Two other things I want to say. I'll start with the easy one. It's tempting, when you fall for someone, to ignore everything else in your world."
"I'm not ignoring Odd."
"I'm not finished,"
Dad says, voice gently stern.
"I need you to promise me that you are taking care of your other relationships, that you are spending time with Autumn and Eric and Manny, that you are still being a role model for Haley, that you are being an attentive and helpful son to your mother."
I nod. "I promise. The reason I say that is because it's important you keep your life full, regardless of how deep your relationship with Sebastian becomes. This is independent of his religion. If it continues and works out somehow, then you'll want friends who accept and support you. And if for whatever reason it does not work out, you'll need to have people you can turn to." I stare at the floor, feeling an odd, warring reaction inside. He's right. It makes sense. But I hate the implication that I don't know this already.
"The other thing I wanted to tell you,"
Dad scratches his jaw, looking away.
"I don't share your mother's history with the church, so my reaction to your relationship is drastically different from hers."
He meets my eyes again.
"That said, I don't think she's wrong. I don't necessarily agree with each of her reasons for warning you off, but I do agree that it's complicated. I assume his parents wouldn't approve?"
I think it goes a shade beyond disapproval. Dad is already nodding at this. So anytime you're with him, you're going behind his parents' backs.
Yeah.
I don't love that, he admits quietly. I like to think if the situation were reversed, you would either be open with us or not betray our wishes while you lived at home. The difference, Dad, is I can be open with you.
The thing is, Tan, you're 18, and what you do with your body is your choice. But what you do under my roof is still something I have say over.
Oh, I love you and your sister and your mother more than anything on this planet. You know that.
I know.
And I know you are attracted to girls and boys. I know you're going to experiment, and I never for one second begrudge you that. He meets my eyes. The complexity here is not that Sebastian is male. If I had walked in on you with someone outside the church, I probably wouldn't have even said anything, and we'd exchange a knowing look across the dinner table, and that would be that. My desire to curl into a ball and rock in the corner rises. This is so awkward. But I don't want you and Sebastian using our house to sneak around behind his parents' backs.
Dad, I say, face hot, we don't have a lot of other options.
Sebastian is an adult. He can move out if he wants his own space with his own rules. This, right here, is essentially Dad closing the door on any discussion. I know this opinion comes from experience, and sitting here, staring at the face I know nearly as well as my own, I realize how hard it is for Dad to say this to me. After all, according to his family, he fell in love with the wrong woman 22 years ago.
Chapter 12. Autumn's mom answers the door, stepping back to let me in. She gave her daughter the dimpled smile genes, but that's about it. Audie is all red hair and freckled nose and bright blue eyes. Mrs. Green has black hair, brown eyes, olive skin. I wonder what it's like to every day look at a daughter who is so similar to Mrs. Green's dead husband. It's either wonderful or heartbreaking. Most likely it's a combination of both. We have a routine. I kiss her cheek hello, and she tells me she has some Yoo-hoos in the fridge, and I act excited. They're the weirdest thing, like watery chocolate milk in juice boxes. I mentioned I liked them one time to Mrs. Green my first summer here, and she's been buying them for me ever since. Now I always feel obligated to take one with me on my way up to Audie's room, but actually, I can't stomach them anymore. We've been doing a small science experiment with a plant on her shelf. Can African violets survive solely on Yoo-hoo? Princess Autumn is sprawled on her floor with a draft of her chapters in front of her. She's even marking it up with a red pen. I can't make this shit up. Audie, you are the cutest, nerdiest person I have ever met in my entire life. She doesn't even look up when I enter. Don't be patronizing. Don't you know that red pen can be viewed as harsh and can hurt students' esteem? Better use purple. Blue eyes turn up to my face. I like red. Her long ginger hair is piled in an enormous bun atop her head. I know you do. Pushing off her elbows, she moves to sit up, cross-legged now. What are you doing here? This hurts a bit, because it tells me Dad is right. Before Sebastian, it wouldn't be weird for me to just come over here any time. Now, I see Audie maybe once a week outside of school, and spend so much more time alone, writing words and words and words about him, no matter how much my brain screams at me to start the new book. I can't stop by and hang with my best girl.
You've been busy.
So have you. I give her a meaningful eyebrow waggle. Did you have fun with Eric the other night?
If by fun you mean make out until our faces fell off, then yes.
My jaw drops.
Seriously?
She nods, blushing through her freckles.
And how many your mom jokes did he make?
Laughing, she sings.
None.
I don't believe you. To Eric, everything is an opportunity for a your mom or that's what she said joke. It doesn't matter how many times we remind him it's no longer 2013.
It was fun, she says, leaning back against her bed. I like him.
I reach forward, pinching her cheek. There's something tight inside me. It isn't jealousy, exactly, but it's some weird sense of loss, like it isn't Tanner and Autumn versus everyone else anymore. We both have other people now, even if we don't know it yet.
What's that face?
She draws a circle in the air in front of me.
Just thinking.
I pick up her red pen, doodle on the sole of my sneaker. I wanted to talk to you. This sounds serious. It's not. I narrow my eyes, thinking. No, it is, I guess. I just wanted to say I'm sorry. She doesn't say anything, so I look up at her, trying to read her expression. I know Autumn better than I know almost anyone, but right now I can't decipher what she's thinking. For what? She says finally. For being so distracted. It's a busy term, she says. She leans back and tugs at a loose thread at the hem of my jeans. I'm sorry I haven't been the best friend lately either. This surprises me, and I look up at her. What do you mean? I know you've become friends with Sebastian, and I guess I was jealous. Oh, alarm bells go off in my head. She swallows, and it's awkward and audible, and her voice wavers when she says, I mean, he's getting some of your time that I usually get, and there's something so intense about it when you guys are talking, so I feel like he might be taking something that's mine. She looks up at me. Does this make sense? My heart jackhammers up and down in my chest. I think so. Her face goes red, telling me that this conversation is more than just about friendship. If she were just staking her bestie territory, she wouldn't blush. She would be brass. But here it's something else. And even if she doesn't know the extent of things between me and Sebastian, she feels the intensity of it. There's some awareness she can't name yet. I'm jealous, she says, and tries to look brave with her chin in the air, for a lot of reasons, but I'm working on some of them. It feels like I've been knocked in the chest with a hammer. You know I love you, right? Her cheeks flush bright pink. Yeah. Like, you're one of the most important people in the world to me, okay? She looks up, eyes glassy. Yeah, I know. In truth, Autumn has always known who she is and what she wants. She's always wanted to be a writer. She's white, she's straight, she's beautiful. She has a path she can follow that will lead her to these things, and no one will ever tell her she can't or shouldn't want them. I'm good at the physical sciences, but am ambivalent about following my dad down the doctor trail and have no idea what else I could be. I'm just a bisexual, half-Jewish kid who's falling in love with an LDS guy. The path for me isn't as clear. Come here, I say. She crawls onto my lap, and I wrap her up in my arms, holding her as long as she'll let me. She smells like her favorite Aveda shampoo, and her hair is soft on my neck, and I wish for the 100th time to feel something like desire for her, but instead it's just a deep, desperate fondness. I see now what Dad meant. It's easy to say that I'll keep my friendships, but I need to do more than that. I need to protect them, too. More than likely, we aren't going to be going to the same college next year, and now is the time to make sure we're solid. If I ever lost her, I'd be devastated. The Warriors are playing the Cavs in a rematch, and Dad is planted on the couch. Every line of his body is tense. The degree to which he despises LeBron James eludes me, but I can't fault him for his loyalty. I saw Autumn today, I tell him. He grunts, nodding. He's clearly not listening. We eloped. Yeah? You need a beer and a beer gut if you're going to be this zoned out at the television. He grunts again, nodding. I'm in trouble. Can I have $500? Finally, Dad looks at me, horrified. What? Just checking. Blinking a few times, he exhales in relief as the game goes to commercial break. What were you saying? That I saw Audie today. She's well? I nod. I think she's dating Eric. Eric Cushing? Again, I nod. He processes this the way I expected him to. I thought she was into you. There's no way to answer this without sounding like a dick. I think she is, a little. Did you tell her about Sebastian? Seriously? No. The game comes back on, and I feel bad for doing this now, but it's like termites eating at a wooden beam. If I don't get it out of me, I will be riddled with anxiety. Dad, what happened when you told Bubby that you were dating Mom? He gives the television a last reluctant glance before he reaches for the remote, muting it, and then he turns, pulling one leg up on the couch to face me. This was a long time ago, Tan. I just want to hear about it again. I've heard the story before, but sometimes we hear things as kids and the details sort of wash over us. What sticks isn't always what is meant to. The story of my parents' courtship is one of those things. It was romantic when they first told us about it, and the reality of how hard it was on Dad and his family, and Mom, too, was lost in the greater narrative that they got there happily ever after. I was 13, Haley was 10, and the story they gave us was abbreviated. Bubby wanted Dad to marry her best friend's daughter, a woman who was raised in Hungary and moved here for college. It was normal, they told us, for the parents to be hands-on with the matchmaking. They didn't explain the other bits that I learned over time, talking to aunties and cousins, like how having the family involved makes sense in a lot of ways. Marriage is forever, and infatuation wears off. Finding someone that comes from the same community and has the same values in the end is more important than being with the person you want to have sex with for a few months. But Dad met Mom at Stanford, and as Mom says, she knew. He fought it, but in the end, he knew too. I met your mom my first day in med school, he recounts. She was working at this funky sandwich shop near the campus, and I came in, frazzled and starving. I'd moved only the day before classes started, and the reality of being away from home was so different from my expectations. It was expensive and busy, and my workload was unbelievable already. She made the most perfect chicken sandwich, handed it to me, and asked if she could take me to dinner. I've heard this part. I love this part because usually Dad slips in a joke about the bait and switch with Mom's cooking. This time he doesn't. I thought she meant it to be friendly because I looked so overwhelmed. It never occurred to me that she would think we could date. He laughs. But when she showed up, it was clear what her intentions were. And now his voice lowers. I'm no longer given the surface version of the story. I'm given the version a grown man gives to his grown son. Mom is beautiful. She's always been beautiful. Her confidence makes her nearly irresistible, but combined with her brilliance, Dad never stood a chance. He was only 21, after all, young for a med student, and that first night at dinner he told himself it wouldn't hurt to spend some time with her. He'd had a couple of girlfriends before, but nothing serious. He always knew that he would eventually return home and marry someone from the community. Mom and Dad dated in secret, and for 2 years together, even while he was staying at her place, he still insisted he would marry a Jewish woman. Every time he said this, she would hide her hurt and say, "Okay, Paul." When Bubby and Dad's sister Becca came to visit for 3 weeks, Mom never once met them. He didn't tell them anything about her, and the entire time they were in town, she never once saw him either. It was like he disappeared. He didn't call or check in. She broke up with him after they left, and Dad never argued. He told her he wished her well and watched her walk away. Whereas Dad has always been mute on the subject of their time apart, Mom has jokingly referred to it as the dark year. Joke or not, I've seen photos of them from this time, and the image has always made me mildly uneasy. My parents are capital I, capital L, in love. Dad thinks Mom is brilliant, beautiful. He thinks she hung the stars. She thinks he is the smartest, most wonderful man alive. I'm sure their time apart made them grateful for what they have, but it's clear they felt this way even before the breakup. In those photos, they both have this sort of carved-out, hollow look. The bluish circles under Dad's eyes seem like dark phases of the moon. Mom is already on the thin side, but in the dark years she was skeletal. He admits to me now that he couldn't sleep. For nearly a year, he slept only a couple hours a night. It wasn't rare to find med students who were up all night studying, but Dad is an organized, dedicated guy and had no problem staying on top of his work. He couldn't sleep because he was in love with her. That year, it had felt like he was a widower. He went to her old apartment and begged her to take him back. I never knew this. I've always heard that they just happened to run into each other on campus one day, and Dad knew from then on that he couldn't stay away from her. Why did you tell us that you ran into Mom on campus? Because that's what I told Bubby, he says quietly. It hurt her for a long time that I married Jenna. But to think that I had sought her out and begged her to come back to me would have been a more active betrayal. My heart aches when he says this. Every time I go see Sebastian feels like an active betrayal of Mom. I just never had a name for it before now. Jenna sat me down, Dad says, and yelled at me for an hour. She told me how much it hurt to be put in a position where she had no power. She told me that she would always love me, but she didn't trust me. He laughs. She sent me away and told me to prove myself to her. What did you do? I called Bubby and told her that I was in love with a woman named Jenna Peterson. I bought a ring and went back to your mother's apartment and asked her to marry me. Apparently Mom said, "When?" And Dad said, "Whenever you want." So they were married at the courthouse the next morning, another detail I'd never heard. I've seen countless photos of their official wedding, the signing of the ketubah, Mom obscured from view beneath her veil, waiting to walk down the aisle, my dad breaking the glass under the chuppah, the rows of photos of honored friends and family members giving the Sheva Brachot, the seven blessings, my parents being lifted on wide wooden chairs while their friends danced around them. Their wedding photos lined the upstairs hallway. I had no idea they were legally married nearly a year before. Does Bubby know that you were married earlier?
No.
Did you feel guilty? Dad smiles at me.
Not for a single second. Your mom is my son. My world is only warm when she is in it.
I can't imagine what that was like for you. I look down at my hands. I don't know how to stay away from Sebastian, or if I even could. I need to ask as much as I dread the answer. Did you tell her that you walked in on me and Sebastian?
I did.
Was she mad?
She wasn't surprised, but she agreed with what I said to you.
He leans closer, kissing my forehead.
What Jenna learned with me was that she always had power, even when she felt like I didn't acknowledge her. You are not helpless here, but you need to be clear about what you are and are not willing to tolerate.
He tucks a finger under my chin, lifting my face to his.
Are you willing to be a secret? Maybe you are for now, but this is your life, and it will stretch out before you, and you are the only person who can make it whatever you want it to be.
Chapter 13. Sebastian texts me before bed every night and the first thing every morning. Sometimes they're as simple as, hey. Other times they're longer, but barely. Like the Wednesday after dinner at his house, he sent me a note that said simply, I'm glad we agree on the situation. I take it to mean we're definitely together. I also take it to mean we're definitely a secret. Ergo, we're a little homeless. My house is now out of the question. His house is definitely out of the question. We could hang out in my car, but not only does that feel too shady, it feels dangerous, like we'd be inside a fishbowl with a sense of privacy and no real walls. So, beginning the weekend after we're busted in my room by Dad, at least twice a week, we hike. Not only does it allow us to get away from prying eyes during a time of year when no one else is out on the mountain, but, at least for me, it helps burn off the extra energy I seem to be carting around. It's cold as hell some days, but worth it. Things we have done in the 2 weeks after he whispered the word boyfriend into a kiss. Celebrated our 1 week and 2 week anniversaries in the cheesiest way possible, cupcakes and handmade cards. Stealing knowing glances in every seminar class we're in together. Passing off letters as subtly as we can, usually under the guise of handing him pages of my book to read and him handing them back. Side note, my book is flying out of me, but it's still not the one I'm supposed to be writing. Thinking about it sends me into a spiraling panic. Moving on. Rereading the letters until the paper is practically falling apart. Finding creative use for emojis in texts. Things we have not done since he whispered the word boyfriend into a kiss. Kissed. I know it's hard for both of us to be able to feel closer without feeling closer, but everything else is so good right now. I won't let the lack of groping pull me down off cloud nine. Autumn takes a page off the stack of handouts going around the room and drops the pile onto my desk, pulling me out of my fog. Sebastian is at the front of the room, bent over a notebook with Clive and Burrito Dave. It doesn't matter that Clive is dating Camille Hart and Burrito Dave is dating half the junior class. Jealousy spikes sharply between my ribs. As if he can sense the fire of my stare, Sebastian glances up and then quickly away, blushing.
Do you?
Autumn starts and then shakes her head.
Never mind.
Do I what? She leans in, whispering.
Do you think he likes you, Sebastian?
My heart trips over her question, and I force my attention back down to the laptop in front of me, typing the same word over and over again. Thursday, 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 Thursday. Thursday is 3 days from now, and when we're going on our next hike.
How would I know?
I ask, casual, unconcerned. Maybe I should ask Sasha to prom. Fujita makes the rounds, checking in on us to see how we're progressing with word count, chapter arcs, plot development, pacing.
It's March 10th, and we're supposed to have 20,000 words written, as well as our critique buddies picked out. I have more than 40,000 words written, but they're all this, and I can't turn this in. Autumn didn't want to work with me. Everyone but me was surprised by this, so I lack a partner, and I'm going to fly under the radar with this as long as possible. I should have known better, though. Despite his hippie, messy, literary dude vibe, Fujita is on top of the details. Tanner, he says, coming up behind me so stealthily that I jump, slamming my laptop closed. Laughing, he bends in close, stage whispering, "What kind of novel are you writing, kid?" If I had my way, it would go from young adult to pornography, but I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen. See also Secret Homeless Relationship. See also Must Start the New Book ASAP. Contemporary, I tell him, adding in case he saw my string of Thursdays, I'm just a little stuck today. We all have days when it flows and days when it doesn't. He says this loud enough for the benefit of the entire class, and then leans in again. You're on track otherwise? Surprisingly, I say, yes, depending how you look at it. Good. Kneeling down, Fujita comes eye to eye with me. So, it looks like everyone else is paired up for critiques. Since you're on track but struggling today, I'm going to have Sebastian give you feedback. My pulse trips. I know he's been talking to you a bit about your idea, and in the absence of an even number of students in the class anyway, that seems like the easiest way to go. He pats my knee. Work for you? I grin. Works for me. What's this? Fujita and I both look up as Sebastian materializes at our side. I was just letting Tanner know that you'll be his critique buddy. Sebastian smiles his easy, confident smile, but his eyes dance over to me. Cool. A pair of perfect dark eyebrows rise. That means you'll have to show me what you've got so far. I lift my brows in return. It's pretty bare. It's okay, he says breezily. I can help you find the shape of it. Autumn clears her throat. Fujita claps us both on the back. Great! Onward! Sebastian slides a folder onto my desk. Here are some of my notes from our last meeting. My pulse sprints out of the starting gate, and my voice shakes when I try for a casual, awesome, thanks. I feel Autumn's attention on the side of my face the second he walks away. Without looking over at her, I ask, what's up, Adi? She leans in, whispering, you and Sebastian just had an entire conversation in sexual innuendo. We did? She goes quiet, but her intentional pause is a living, breathing thing between us. Finally, I meet her eyes, and before I look away, I wonder whether she sees it all there. I know it's written on my face as clearly as it would be on a banner in the sky. Sebastian plus Tanner equals a boyfriend thing. Tanner, she says again, slowly, like she's nearing the end of an Agatha Christie novel. I turn in my seat to face her. My skin is on fire beneath my shirt, chest hot and prickly. I think I'm going to ask Sasha to prom. T. How was your weekend? Did your family end up going down to Salt Lake? This weekend at the brother house was insane. It seemed like our doorbell was constantly ringing. We had a few primary activities at church on Saturday. Lizzie and I were helping run it, and trying to get 26-year-olds into a single-file line is like trying to work with feral cats. Plus, I think Sister Cooper gave them candy when she finished her activity with them before ours, so they were wild. I got home late on Saturday and went up to my room and thought about you for about 2 hours before I could fall asleep. Well, I thought about you and prayed, and then thought about you some more. Both activities make me feel amazing. The more I pray, the more confident I am that what we're doing together is right. But then I'm also lonely. I wish we could be together at the end of days like this, talking about it in the same space, rather than through these letters. But we have this, at least. And we have Thursday. Is it crazy? I'm so excited. You might have to control me. All I want to do is kiss and kiss and kiss you. When are you going to let me read your new book? You're good, Tanner. I'm dying to see what you're writing now. I'm heading off to campus and will be in class for the seminar today to give this to you. When you finish reading it, just know that I was thinking about kissing you while I was writing this sentence, and all the ones that came before it, probably. Yours, S.
I read it about 17 times before tucking it into the deepest pocket in my backpack, where I will hold it until I get home and can put it in a shoebox on the top shelf of my closet. Now that I think about it, if I died today, a shoebox on the top shelf of my closet is where my parents will probably look first for clues about what happened to me. I should find a better hiding place. I let these meandering thoughts distract me from the uneasiness I feel regarding Sebastian's curiosity about my book. Don't get me wrong, I actually love what I have so far. But I have to face reality. At this point, I'm not going to have a book I can turn in. So far, that truth has been this repellent magnet, and my thoughts bound freely away from it. I've told myself again and again that I can demonstrate that I did it, give Fujita some sample pages before Sebastian appears in the narrative under the request of confidentiality, and ask him to grade me on what he sees. Fujita is a pretty laid-back guy. I think he'd actually do this for me. Or I can admit to Sebastian that this book is still about us, and have him press to grade some of the projects, mine included, under the guise of taking some of the work off Fujita's hands. But what if Fujita doesn't go for it? What if he won't give me a passing grade based on the first 20 pages or so? I've been writing in a fever. Since I crap-edited the first 4 chapters for Sebastian, I haven't changed any details, not even our names. In the present version, it's all there, in stark black and white for the world to see, and I don't want to change it. The seminar, Bishop Brother, our hikes on Y Mountain, my parents, my sister, our friends. I know Sebastian needs me to, but I don't want to hide. He's waiting for me at the trailhead at 3 on Thursday. We have only a few more hours of daylight, but I'm hoping we can stay out later tonight, stretch this into the darkness. I know he doesn't have any classes until after lunch tomorrow, and I'm happy functioning on little sleep. Hey, he shakes his head, flipping his hair out of his eyes. My skin hums. I want to press him up against a tree and feel his hair slip through my fingers. Hey, God, we are idiots, grinning like we've just won a gold medal the size of Idaho. His eyes are impish, and I love this side of him. I wonder who else sees it. I want to think what I see right here in his eyes is his one pure truth. You brought water? He asks. I turn halfway to show him my camelback. The big one. Good. We're going up today. You ready? I'll follow you anywhere. With an enormous grin, he turns, charging up the path and into the thick, rain-damp brush. I follow close behind. The wind picks up as we climb, and we don't bother with small talk. It reminds me of going to a seafood buffet with Dad when he took me to a conference in New Orleans. Dad got this intensely focused look on his face. Don't eat the filler, he said, meaning breadsticks, tiny sandwiches, even the beautiful, tiny but flavorless cakes. Dad made a beeline for the crab legs, crawdads, and seared tuna. Breathless small talk right now would be breadsticks. I want to feel Sebastian's body right up against mine the next time he says anything. Most people hiking Y Mountain stop at the enormous painted Y, but after we arrive there a half hour into our hike, we continue, leaving the town sprawling below us. We head where the trail narrows and continues south, then turns east into Slide Canyon. Everything is more rugged here, and we watch our step more carefully to avoid stinging nettle or scratchy brush. Finally, we reach the area of the mountain where there is pine tree cover. We need it less for shade. It's getting colder, in the high 20s now, but we're bundled in jackets, and more for privacy. Sebastian slows and then sits under a thatch of trees overlooking Cascade Mountain and Shingle Mill Peak. I collapse beside him. We've been hiking for well over an hour. Any question I had about whether we'd be here together at night has been put to rest. This is farther than we've hiked together on a weekend, let alone a weekday, and it will take us at least another hour to get home. The sun hangs low in the horizon, turning the sky a heavy, seductive blue. His hand slides into mine, and he leans backward, pressing our joined fists to his chest. Even through his puffy jacket, I can feel his body heat. Holy, that was a hike. I stay seated, leaning back on my other hand to balance and stare out at the canyon. The mountains are dramatically green, with patches of white snow. Their sharp peaks and smooth rock faces are dotted with trees. It's so unlike the valley below us, where everything seems to be dotted with TGI Fridays and convenience stores. 10.
I turn, looking down at him. The temptation to crawl over him and kiss him for hours is nearly impossible to resist. But there's also something pretty great about being able to just sit here and hold hands with my boyfriend. Yeah? He brings my hand to his mouth, kissing my knuckles. Can I read it? It came at me so fast. I was expecting it, but still. Eventually, I'm just... It's not done. He pushes to sit. I get that. You just started it, right? The lie is starting to turn me black inside. Actually, I say, I'm having a hard time beginning. I want to write something new. I do. But every time I sit down at my laptop, I write about... us. I get that too. He goes quiet for a few breaths. I meant what I said. What I read was really good. Thanks. So, if you want, I could work on editing it, making it less recognizable. I'm sure he'd do an amazing job, but he's busy enough as it is. I don't want you to worry about it. He hesitates and then squeezes my hand. It's hard not to, though. You can't turn that book into Fujita, but if you don't turn in something, you'll fail. I know. Guilt flashes cold across my skin. I'm not sure what would be worse, asking for his help here, or trying to start all over. I like thinking about us too, he tells me. I think I would like editing it. I mean, I could send you what I have in chunks to work on, but I don't want to send it to your BYU email. I can tell that a separate email address had never occurred to him. Oh, right. You can make a new Gmail account, and I can send it there. He's already nodding, and it accelerates as the implication of this seems to hit him more fully. I know exactly what he's thinking. We could write emails to each other all the time. He's so adorable. I hate to burst his bubble. Just be careful what you do at home, I tell him. My mom created the Parentelligentsia software. I know better than most how easily they could track every move you make. I don't think my mom and dad are that tech savvy, he says, laughing, but point taken. You'd be surprised how easy it is, I say, half proud, half deeply apologetic to those in my generation who've been hosed by my mother's first invention. It's how my parents found out about me and my interesting guys. They installed the software in our cloud and could see everything I'd searched, even if I cleared my history. His face goes ashen. They came to talk to me about it, and that's when I admitted I'd kissed a boy the summer before. We've alluded to this but never spoken about it freely. Sebastian shifts, facing me. What'd they say? Mom wasn't surprised. I picked up a rock, tossing it over the edge of the cliff. It was harder for Dad, but he wanted it to be easy. He deals with his feelings on his own time, I think. The first conversation, he asked me if I thought it was a phase, and I said maybe. I shrug. I mean, I honestly didn't know. It's not like I'd been through this before. I just knew that I felt the same when I looked at pictures of naked guys as I did when I looked at pictures of naked girls. Sebastian flushes bright red. I don't actually think I've seen his face this heated before. Has he never looked at naked pictures? Have I embarrassed him? Amazing. His words come out a little garbled. Have you had sex? I've been with a few girls, I admit. Only kissed guys. He nods, as if this makes sense. When did you know? I ask. His brow furrows. Know what? About you being bi? No, I laugh, but bite it back because I don't want it to come off as mocking. I mean that you're gay. The confusion on his face deepens. I'm not. Not what? Not that. Something seems to catch in the spinning wheel of my pulse, and it trips. For a breath, my chest hurts. You're not gay? I mean, he says, flustered, trying again. I'm attracted to guys, and I'm with you right now, but I'm not gay. That's a different choice, and I'm not choosing that path. I don't even know what to say. The sensation inside me feels like sinking. I let go of his hand. Like, you're not gay, you're not straight, you're you, he says, leaning forward to catch my eyes. I'm not gay, I'm not straight, I'm me. I want him so much it's nearly painful. So when he kisses me, I try to make the feel of him sucking my bottom lip block out anything else. I want his kiss to be the clarification, the reassurance that a label doesn't matter. This is what matters. But it doesn't. The entire time we kiss, and later when we stand and hike back down, I still have that sensation that I'm sinking. He wants to read my book, the book about falling in love with him. But how can I send my heart to him when he's just said in no uncertain terms that he doesn't speak its language? Chapter 14. Late Saturday afternoon, Autumn jogs after me down my driveway. Finally, we are free of my house, and she lets loose her barrage of questions. You were talking to him when I got here?
Yeah.
You're telling me he doesn't like you? Tanner, I see how he looks at you. I unlock the car, opening the driver's side door. I'm 100% not in the mood for this. Even after talking to him this morning, Sebastian's words from Thursday still bounce around my head. Not that. I'm not gay.
You don't see how he looks at you?
Audie, it's not a denial. It's not a confirmation. It'll have to work for now. She climbs in after me, clicking her seatbelt in, and then turns to face me.
Who is your best friend?
I know the right answer to this one. You, Autumn Summer Green. I turn the ignition and laugh despite my dark mood. Still the best bad name ever. Audie ignores this.
And who do you trust more than anyone in the world?
My dad.
After him,
she holds up her hand. And after your mom, grandmother, family, blah blah. I don't trust Haley as far as I could throw her. Turning, I look over my shoulder to back out of the driveway. Dad won't let me rely solely on the backup camera in the sensible Camry I drive. Autumn slaps the dashboard.
I'm making a point. Stop thwarting me.
You are my best friend. I turn the steering wheel and set out of our neighborhood. I trust you the most.
So why do I feel you aren't telling me something important?
A dog with a bone, this one. My heart is a hammer again, tap, tap, tapping against my sternum. I was on the phone with Sebastian when Audie got to my house. We were talking about his afternoon away at a church youth activity. We were not talking about how ungay he is. We were also not talking about my book.
You're with him all the time, she needles.
Okay, first of all, we're honestly working on my book, I say, and the metaphorical knife pokes my conscience in reprimand. You chose to work with Clive, which is fine, but now I'm paired with Sebastian. We hang out. Second, I don't know if he's gay or what, and that's certainly not even a lie. But third, his sexuality isn't our business. The only reason it's mine is because... Only now does it register that giving this relationship oxygen outside our Sebastian plus Tanner bubble would be amazing. Even the idea of talking to someone other than Mom and Dad about this makes me feel like I can take a full breath for the first time in weeks. I want more than anything to talk with someone else, Audie especially, about what happened on Thursday. If he is gay, she says, chewing a nail, I hope his family isn't too terrible about it. It makes me sort of sad. She holds up her hand. I know you aren't gay, but shouldn't the bishop's son be allowed to like dudes if he wants to? This conversation makes me feel mildly queasy. Why haven't I come out to Audie yet? Yes, Mom's panic before we moved was mildly traumatizing to me, and Audie's friendship is my bedrock. I guess I've never wanted to risk it. But still, Autumn Summer Green is the least close-minded person I've ever known, isn't she? Someone needs to have a revelation, I say, glancing at her. Call the prophet. Let him know it's time to accept the queer folk into his heart. It's gonna happen, she says. Someone is going to have a revelation soon. Revelations are a big part of the LDS faith. It's a pretty progressive idea. The world is changing, and the church needs God to help guide it through these times. After all, they are the Latter-day Saints. They believe anyone can have a revelation, that is, a communication directly from God, as long as they're seeking it with the intention of doing something good. But only the current living prophet, the church president, can have revelations that make their way into church doctrine. He, always a he, works with two counselors and the quorum of the 12 apostles, also men, quote, under the inspiration of God,
to determine what the church's position is on any given matter and whether rules get changed. For example, the hot button. Polygamy was okay back in the day. Autumn's mom once explained it to me that at the time of early LDS settlements, there were many women and few men to protect them. By taking on multiple wives, men could better provide for the women in the community. But in my own digging, I read how the U.S. government didn't love this aspect of the church and wouldn't grant Utah states' rights. In 1890, Church President Wilfred Woodruff declared that plural marriage was no longer acceptable to God. Apparently, he'd had a revelation about it. Conveniently, this was what the U.S. government needed to hear. Utah became a state. The idea of a revelation about wholly accepting openly LGBTQ members in the church is pretty much the single golden thread I hang on to for hope whenever I let myself think past today or tomorrow with Sebastian. Brigham Young himself said, in essence, he hopes that people in the church don't just take what the leaders say as God's truth. He wants them to pray and find that truth within themselves, too. No doubt Daddy Young wasn't talking about homosexuality, but there are those of us who live in the modern world who are not LDS and who sincerely hope that a revelation about homosexuality not being a sin is just a matter of time. And yet, even with the legalization of same-sex marriage, it still hasn't happened. Autumn taps her fingers on her thighs in time with the music. I hadn't been listening to what's been playing, but now it's a song I love. It has this slow, building beat, and the singer's voice is throaty, scratchy. The lyrics seem innocent at first, but it's clear it's about sex, just like nearly every song on the radio. It makes me think about sex, and what that would be like with Sebastian. How it happens, how we'd be. It's this vast unknown, both thrilling and terrifying. Did you talk to Sasha? Autumn asks me out of the blue. About what? She stares at me. About prom? Seriously, Audie, why are you so hung up on this? Because you said you were going to ask her. But why do you care? I want you to go to your senior prom, she smiles winningly at me, and I don't want to go alone with Eric. This sets off an alarm bell in my brain. Wait, why? I just want to take things slow with him. I like him, but... She looks out the passenger window, deflating when she sees that we've arrived at the lake. But what? I ask, pulling into a parking spot. No, nothing like that. He's good. I just want you there. She holds my eyes for one, two, three. Are you sure you don't want to go with me? Do you want to go with me? Dude, Audie, I'll go with you if that's what you need. She slumps. I can't back out with Eric now. Relief floods my blood. Sebastian would understand, surely, but the idea of dancing with Autumn when I'd rather be with Sebastian doesn't seem fair to either of them. Turning off the ignition, I lean back, closing my eyes. I don't feel like being here with Manny or any of the other kids from school, messing around in the parking lot with remote-controlled cars. I feel like going home and writing out this tangle and heat in my head. I'm upset with Sebastian and hate that he's gone for the entire day when I feel so twisted inside. How many girls have you been with? I blink over at her, startled by the abrupt question. What? Even in hindsight, I feel this weird twinge of disloyalty to Sebastian for having slept with anyone else. Autumn is blushing. She looks sheepish. Just curious. Sometimes I wonder if I'm the only virgin left. I shake my head. I promise you're not. Right. Like, I'm sure you have a whole bunch of stories I don't even know about. God, she's making me uneasy. Audie, you know who I've been with. Three. Jessa, Kaylee, and Trin. I reach for her hand. I need air. Come on. Utah Lake used to be gorgeous. It was full and splashy and a great place for all kinds of environmentally irresponsible water sports that positively horrified my parents when we first moved here. If you ask my dad, jet skis are the devil's work. Now the water level is low and the algae cover is so thick that even if it were swimming weather, we probably wouldn't venture in. Instead, we just lurk between the parking lot and the shore, eating the pizza Manny brought, and throwing stones as far out into the horizon as we can. I dream about college life and living in a big city where I can spend a day in museums or at a bar watching soccer or doing any number of things that don't involve sitting around, talking about the same crap we talk about every day at school. I dream about convincing Sebastian to move with me and showing him that being gay isn't a bad thing. Cole brought a few of his college friends I've never met, and they're flying radio-controlled helicopters near the parking lot. They're big, football-y, and the kind of loud, frequently swearing guys that have always made me mildly uncomfortable. I'm no Manny, but I'm not small by any stretch, and I know there's a certain calm to me that's often interpreted as threatening somehow. One of them, Eli, sizes me up with a frown before looking at Autumn as if he's going to roll her up in a slice of pizza and eat her. He's muscular in a suspicious way, with a thick neck and splotchy, acne-scarred skin. She shuffles into my side, playing the girlfriend role, so I immediately take on the boyfriend role, tucking my arm around her, meeting his gaze. Eli looks away. "You don't want to experiment with that?" I joke. Audie grunts out a, "No." After our call this morning was cut short by Autumn's arrival, Sebastian left for an activity at some park in South Jordan. I know he isn't going to be home until after 6, but it doesn't stop me from obsessively checking to see if I have any cryptically suggestive emojis in my text box. I don't. I hate the way we left things, with a casual talk later, and I especially hate that he doesn't seem to have any sense how his words on Thursday affected me. It's something I've read about in the pamphlets Mom has left out, how queer kids sometimes feel this hovering sense of doubt, knowing someone could reject us not only for who we are specifically, but who we are more deeply. But I've never really felt it before now. If Sebastian doesn't think he's gay, then what the hell is he doing with me? I pull Autumn closer, calmed by the solid weight of her against me. Manny recruits a few guys to help him build a huge radio-controlled Humvee, and when they're done, they take turns hurling it over the uneven ground, the path down to the lake, small boulders bordering the parking lot. Our attention is drawn away by a scuffle in the distance, near my car. Cole's friends are wrestling, laughing, and we watch as a big guy, I think is named Micah, takes down Eli. Beneath him, Eli bucks and shoves, but he can't get up. I don't know what he's done to get wrestled to the ground, even if it's clearly good-natured, but I can't help enjoying the sight of him pinned down there. We've exchanged zero words. He just has that asshole vibe about him. "Get off me, faggot!" he yells, noticing how much attention they're getting now. Absolute zero. Everything stops moving inside me. Every particle of energy is focused on schooling my expression. Beside me, Audie freezes too. The word faggot seems to echo across the surface of the lake, but the only people it seems to have hit somewhere tender is the two of us. Micah gets up, laughing harder, and helps Eli to his feet. "I bet you just got the biggest boner, you fucking homo." Eli brushes off his jeans. His face is even redder than it was before. I turn away, acting like I'm just going to squint across the horizon at the beautiful mountains in the distance. But when I catch a glimpse of Audie, she looks like she wants to rip Eli's balls off with her bare hands. I can't really blame her. I'm horrified to realize people still talk like that. Anywhere. Wandering off, Micah seems unconcerned. The rest of the group turns to walk over to where Micah is picking up his fallen remote control toy, and the moment seems to pass as easily as a wave breaking on the rocky shore. "Gross," Audie whispers. She looks up at me, and I try to smile through my repressed rage. I try to channel Sebastian, and for the first time I understand his amazing fake smile. He's had so much practice. She stands, wiping the dried grass from her jeans. "I think we should head out." I follow her. "You okay?" "Yeah," she says. "Just not my crowd." Why would Cole hang out with these douchebags? Not my crowd either. I'm relieved. "No idea." Manny follows, protesting. "Guys, you just got here. Don't you want to race these cars?" "I told Tanner I wasn't feeling great this morning," Audie lies. "I feel worse." "I'm her ride," I say, shrugging as if she's dragging me out of here against my wishes. But remote-controlled vehicles and homophobia just aren't my cup of tea, I guess. He walks us to my car, stopping me at the driver's side. "Tanner, what Eli said back there?" Heat pricks at the back of my neck. "What did he say?" "Aw, man, come on," Manny laughs, looking to the side in a don't-make-me-say-it gesture. "Whatever. Eli's an idiot." I move to get in the car. This is so weird. This is so bad. It's like he knows about me. How does he know? Not to be detoured, Manny pushes his sunglasses up on his head, squinting at me in confusion. "Tan, wait.
Just so you know, we're cool.
Yeah?
I would never let someone say that crap to you.
I don't resist when he pulls me into a hug, but I feel like a two-